Greetings, you beautiful humans. This is Glenn Klein Online. It's Thursday, August 23rd, 2007, the only August 23rd, 2007 in the history of humanity. Let us keep that in mind as we always encourage you to do on this program called Glenn Klein Online. Ladies and gentlemen, this is not a dress rehearsal. As far as I can tell, although with all due respect to those that believe in reincarnation, this is it. And so we want to take full advantage of it. Try never to leave the people that you love, whether it be in a conversation or actually departing from their presence, without telling them that you love them, because eventually that will be the last time that your last time talking to them eventually will be your last time speaking with them. And this is not a morbid thought, this is reality. We all die eventually. I mean, that's the two things, or the three things, that we all have in common. You're born, you pay taxes, and you die. And you never know what the next minute portends, so enjoy the moment. And I like to say it this way. The day of 9/11, 2001, the last thing in the world, the people that were going up the elevators and the escalators in the Twin Towers thought was going to happen to them was that they were going to have a jet airliner land in their lap that morning. But there it happened. And so the question I always ask audiences is, if this was the last day of your life, what would you be doing? Would you be here listening to me? And of course, very, very rarely does somebody raise their hand and say, yes, Glenn, this is exactly what I would be doing on the last day of my life. But the fact of the matter is, beautiful humans, is that this could be it. And again, it's not a morbid thought, it's reality. Sometimes, folks, we just need to deal with reality. So I tell people all the time, you've heard me say it before, if you're a regular listener, I know exactly what I will be doing on the last day of my life. I'll be doing exactly what I'm doing today. I'll be trying to make a difference, and I'll be trying to have some fun and have people come along for the ride. So really the question isn't what you do with your life, but how you do what you do. And so we have this webcast known as Glenn Klein Online to hopefully impart some wisdom, some information, some entertainment, and some pleasure during the course of your day. I just knocked into the microphone. You're not supposed to do that in professional radio, Steve. Our guest tonight is author and a friend of ours from the beautiful state of Iowa. Steve, is this heaven?
Iowa is heaven. It's where the field of dreams is.
Well,
land of corn and swine.
Well, corn and swine. Well, Steve L. Rogers is the author of the book Quit Going to Church and Other Musings of a Former Institutional Man. Please welcome the aforementioned Steve Rogers. Stephen, how are you this evening?
Well, I'm very well, Glenn. Thank you. Thank you for inviting me to share this time with you.
Well, it is an absolute pleasure. Stephen's father, Ivan, truly one of the great men I've met in my life, and always have for well over a decade now, probably closer to 20 years, have considered him one of the more influential and mentoring figures in my experience. And I would assume you would say the same thing about him as well, Steve.
Well, absolutely. Without a doubt, Dad has been the foremost of my mentors.
You know, one of the great things about your dad is that he's got such a great sense of humor. When that boy laughs, I mean, he laughs. He has a serious, serious, just hearty laugh.
Yes, he laughs, and he knows how to turn a phrase and tell a story, and he's a pretty colorful guy.
And that man can preach.
Yes, he can.
He can preach it. This is Glenn Klein Online. We're talking with Stephen Rogers, who's the author of the new book, Quit, Going to Church, and going is in, what do you call those things, apostrophes. And we're going to talk about the book, but you start out of the book, Steve, by not talking about your dad, but talking about your grandfather. And why don't you give the folks that are listening an idea about not only about your relationship with your grandfather and why you started telling his story in your book, but also just generally about your background.
Well, we've talked about my dad. My first memories of my dad were of him preaching. He was pastoring a little startup church out on the outskirts of Des Moines, Iowa, and a little then was an out in the country little town called Clive, Iowa. It's now a suburb. But Dad had a little congregation there, and he was the first in his family to graduate from high school and go on and get a college degree, and he was a preacher. And so I grew up in humble little churches in the early years, and there was a lot of fundamentalism, a lot of hell and brimstone preaching that flavored the church at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And juxtaposed against that was my grandfather, who was a great guy. He was a big man, a man's man. And Grandpa was not a churchgoer by any stretch. He was a hard drinker and smoker and jokester and bar fighter. And
you're telling me he smoked, drank, and chewed and hung around with girls that do?
Oh, he absolutely did.
Oh, boy. Can't have that now.
Growing up, I had this division between my dad, who was kind of a holy man, a preacher, a pastor, and my grandfather, who was a rough and tumble Joe Sixpack kind of a guy. And I admired them both, but I was particularly drawn to Grandpa. he seemed to me what manhood was all about. And so, you know, we would have prayer times as a family, and we'd always pray for Grandpa, that Grandpa would come into the faith and quit all of his bad habits and become a good Christian. And I grew up in my early years, the elementary years of my life, very concerned that Grandpa would die before coming to faith. And that meant, as we were taught, that then he would be eternally consigned to conscious torment in a place called hell. And so that flavored some of my early going. And that's kind of where I start in the book, to on the journey that led me to become a former institutional man.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that, because there's a very, very powerful part of this book that I want to reference. But before we do, we want to remind everybody that you're listening to Glenn Klein Online. If you've got questions tonight, as always, feel free to email them to coach@glennklineonline.com. That's coach@glennklineonline.com, because I am your coach for life. So, Stephen, you end up being raised in the church. You have an experience, as many young adults did in the counterculture during the 60s, of sex, drugs, and rock and roll, I'm sure.
Yep.
How was that for you?
Oh, it was fun.
Stephen!
For a while.
Yeah, it can be fun, can it?
Yeah, it's it was, but you know, the lows got to be lower than the highs eventually, and I began to slip on a downward slope of self-destruction.
Well, as soon as inebriates or anything else, money, it doesn't make a difference what it is, starts having you instead of you having it, that's a big problem.
Yeah, it takes over, and it began to be more and more work, more and more stress, more and more pressure, more and more money, more and more lying and deceit, more and more fractured relationships, more and more loss of self-respect, all of those things that go with that lifestyle.
And what were your folks doing during this time vis-a-vis your relationship with them?
Well, that's a whole story in itself, because they obviously knew that I was a confused and troubled young man. But they hung in there with me and offered sanctuary and, of course, prayed for me earnestly.
Did they ever warn you that you might be in danger of hellfire?
You know, they didn't.
Interesting.
You know, by that time, Dad had matured in his thinking, and it wasn't that they weren't concerned about that, but they took a more positive and proactive step of just loving me and encouraging me toward better. And no, they weren't threatening and condemning. And frankly, my folks never really were all that much. It was usually guest speakers and the general tone in the church that communicated that to me more than my parents.
Your dad kind of reminded me of an older preacher, as far as his not his style necessarily, but just his tone. A guy named C.M. Ward. Remember C.M. Ward?
Oh yes.
And C.M. Ward used to be an Assemblies of God guy. And he would say, I don't think that preaching should be any different than medicine. It doesn't have to taste bad to be good for you.
Well, that's right. And Dad certainly followed that advice. And so, yeah, they were a positive influence in my life. In fact, they were the only point of sanity there for a while.
I wonder how many people that have been steeped in drugs or alcohol or whatever obsession happens to have them at the moment, with religious family members or friends that are concerned, and rightfully so, about their well-being, have kept those people psychologically in that place of obsession because they say, listen, you're going to hell. I wonder how many people, Stephen, think, well, you know what, I'm going to hell anyway. I might as well just enjoy myself.
Well, I think it happens quite often. We human beings you know, have a capacity to be self-destructive under the best of circumstances. You know, mine was a loving home and all of that, but where there are harsh rules and a lot of laws, legalism and do's and don'ts, there's a scripture in the Bible that says the law, the letter of the law kills. It has a way of enslaving us and killing our spirit and holding us down and diminishing our worth as a person.
I think
that happens quite often.
I just had what we used to call in the church a heavy revy or a heavy revelation, because we know that Jesus said that all these scriptures were about him.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously we and humanity, excuse me, throughout history has taken the Bible and made it say whatever it wanted to say and applied it to everything from keeping people in slavery and every other kind of abomination that you can think of. But the letter of the law kills. Jesus came preaching not just the letter, but also the spirit of the law. The spirit of the law was you couldn't even have a naughty thought. But Jesus, of course, took the letter and the spirit of the law on himself, Stephen, and he was killed. He died in our place. So the letter of the law does kill. Because ultimately, that was referencing the sacrifice on the cross of Jesus over 2,000 years ago. We're talking with Stephen Rogers, who is the author of the new book, Quit Going to Church and Other Musings of a Former Institutional Man. Stephen lives in Urbandale, Iowa. And I looked up your blog, Steve, and it says that you're a former pastor, teacher, missionary, and denominational decision maker. Married with two children, three grandchildren, now post-denominationally devoted to change the current theological, ecclesiastical, spiritual, and social landscape. I love that. Did you write that?
Yes.
Yeah, that's good stuff. All right, so how does a guy who eventually does come back into the fold, so to speak, and ends up going into the ministry and into the denomination that his dad is very influential in, how does he get so institutionalized and then come out of it?
Well, there's a chapter in my book where I tell the story. Basically, when I came off of the out of the drug culture back in the days of what they called the Jesus movement,
talk about the Jesus movement. Some of our listeners may hear that reference from time to time, but they really don't know what the Jesus movement was or what that was all about.
Well, it was kind of a vague hard to pin down thing that happened on the heels of the 60s upheaval, the hippie movement and the sex, drugs, and rock and roll and all that. There was kind of a wave of spiritual awakening that swept across the land where a lot of these disillusioned kids like me returned to their historic faith and embraced Christ as their Lord, but along with it did not embrace a lot of the old traditions and forms and rituals. So it was kind of a loosely defined, spontaneous revival, a spiritual awakening, so to speak, that happened in the late 60s and early 70s. And I was a part of that. I stumbled into a basement where they were having a bunch of people talking, just sharing their faith, long hair and cigarette smoke, rough language, but they were just saying Jesus is the real deal. And I had an encounter with God sitting cross-legged on the floor in that basement and with a bunch of other kids. And it started me on a quest to follow Christ in my life.
And then you talk about, just in the second chapter of your book, which is entitled Institutional Man, you have a quote here from one of my favorite movies. You say, "Do you ever think you'll get out of here?" And then, "One day, when I've got a long white beard and two or three marbles rolling around in my head, they'll let me out. I don't think I could make it on the outside, Andy. I've been in here most of my life. I'm an institutional man now." And then, of course, there's a conversation between Andy Dufresne and Red in the movie Shawshank Redemption. By the way, what's a good Christian like you watching Shawshank Redemption for?
Oh, I think there's so many great themes in that movie. It's one of my favorites.
So, all right. So just like who played that Red in that
Morgan Freeman.
Yeah, Morgan Freeman with Tim Robbins in that in that great movie. He was institutionalized, and here you are coming out of the drug culture into the Jesus movement culture, if you will, with a bunch of hippies saying that they believe in Christ, and then you had some decisions to make, didn't you?
Yeah, I quit using drugs and started reading the Bible voraciously and felt like I wanted to study the Bible formally, and so I enrolled in a local Bible college, which just happened to be affiliated with the same denomination I grew up in. And I was still going where this Jesus movement group was hanging out at this independent church across town. I was still going to their services. And the school made a decision, because other kids were finding out this was kind of a happening thing and were leaving denomination-affiliated churches and going over to this church. The school made a ruling that you had to attend an approved sponsoring denominational church or leave school. And so it put me in a dilemma.
Isn't that that's what they always do, isn't it? They find something that's threatening, and as soon as they sense that their little fiefdom might be jeopardized, they immediately place a rule on it that, of course, some people adhere to, but for other people, it intrigues them even more to what the thing that they wanted them not to do in the first place.
Yeah, and I had gone the rebel and defiant routes, and as a brand new Christian trying to be like Jesus, it seemed at the time that the appropriate thing for me to do was to not be a rebel, and so I hung in there with the school, and as I put it in my book, I made the decision to leave the Jesus Movement Church and go to a denominational church and, as I put it in my book, the institutional doors clanged behind me, and I gradually adapted to life on the inside of the denomination.
As a lot of the beautiful humans that listen to this webcast know that my background is as a Jewish man, and I've noticed, Stephen, that in Judaism, what is honored and what is something that is featured throughout every level of Jewish life is inquisitiveness. But in Christianity, the thing that is focused upon is obedience. And so you assume...
Compliance, I would say.
Compliance is maybe a better way to say it. But so as soon as you step out of that orthodoxy, it's hard to deal with. And of course, you're labeled as a rebel.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but if you choose to stay in, those doors are harder and harder to get open, aren't they?
Yes, they are.
So you decide to go in, you get your minister's license, and you're ordained as a minister, right?
Yes.
And then you start going down the path of being a Christian minister.
I had a ministerial license and an ordination, and I began the career path as a professional clergyman inside of that particular organization, and started out as a staff pastor, and then became a senior pastor, and pastored for 25 years or so, and then took a break and did some missionary work down in Mexico for a couple of years, and then returned to pastoring until 2005. And then along the way, they asked me to serve on various boards and committees, and I did that.
And so how does a guy who has his entire life invested in the church, in churchianity, if you will, end up writing a book called Quit Going to Church?
Well, that's a great question. Basically, what happened was in 2005, well, actually a little bit earlier than that, I started reading some writings of an author by the name of Brian McLaren. And Brian McLaren has written a number of books. The ones that were particularly influential to me was a trilogy of books he wrote called A New Kind of Christian Trilogy. And the first of the trilogy is a book called A New Kind of Christian. And the way I would describe it as I read the book, I had all these things over the years that had troubled me about the church, troubled me about denominationalism, how money was spent, how decisions were made, how power was retained, lots of different things that I was a contributor to. I was, it wasn't that I was the conscience of the organization.
Did you ever try to speak up in some of these moments?
Not as much as I wish. I wish I could say I did more, but I was a team player, and I was a part of the machinery. But it troubled me. But I was a busy pastor, and you know, you're working on sermons,
and you got kids, and you got a wife, and you got to pay the electric bill and everything else.
So I never could flesh it out. I never could think it through. But when I read A New Kind of Christian, the light started coming on, and it resonated deep within both me and my wife, Sally. And I finally came to a point of crisis where I was not believing half of what I was doing, pastoring this church. People liked us. They thought we were good pastors. I was being well paid, and there were no, you know, on the surface there didn't seem to be any big problems, but inside I was very troubled. And it finally came to a crisis point where my wife said, "Why don't you take a sabbatical? Why don't you step out for a while and figure out what's going on?" And so I did 2 years ago.
And what
this month.
And other than authoring your book and writing your blog, which you can find at SoSaysStevo, SoSaysStevo.blogspot.com, SoSaysStevo.blogspot.com. Other than being an author, what have you been doing the last couple of years?
Well, I've done an assortment of things. I spent a time running a paint crew for a house painter, and I helped out at a golf course from time to time.
Well, you'll be interested to know, Stephen, that as, again, the regular listeners of this webcast know, one of the big questions we all get, where can I find like-minded believers that actually believe in the work of the cross without the condemnation and the guilt and the fear?
Yes.
And we said, we don't know that. We know that a lot of have closed once the what we call the gospel, which is good news, ladies and gentlemen, as our good friend and regular guest Michael Williams says all the time, there's no bad news in the gospel, because the gospel is nothing but pure good news.
Yeah.
But there is a church. There's a couple of churches. Mike actually stumbled on one in Houston that have church structure, if you will, but with the gospel, without all the crapola that comes along with churchianity. And the church that Mike is now on staff, believe it or not, is in Houston, Texas, and it's called the Freedom Worship Center, and the pastor there is John Adair. So you never know. This could come to a cornfield near you.
Well, we have a network of people that we meet with in small group settings, in formal settings, from time to time. So for community, we're connected with some folks who are sharing the journey with us here in the local area.
It's Glenn Klein Online. We're talking with Stephen L. Rogers, the author of Quit Going to Church and Other Musings of a Former Institutional Man, no longer institutionalized. I mean, he's leading paint crews and stuff, folks. I mean, that's pretty good stuff. And a golf course? That's good. You can email us your questions. We've got a couple more minutes left here at coach@glennkleinonline.com. That's coach@glennkleinonline.com. Stephen, this question comes in from Tyler in Valdosta, Georgia. He says, Stephen, why do you think that Christians feel that Adam's fall or his sin is more powerful than Jesus' successful life or his righteousness? That's a good question.
Well, that's a great question. And I think it has to do with the whole shame base that has attached itself to Christianity. Failing to understand the full magnitude of what Jesus accomplished on the cross, we're daily confronted with our mortality and our inclination to transgress and sin, and so we tend to focus more on our faults and failings and our striving to be better than we are, rather than to give due credit to what Jesus accomplished on the cross.
And how would you, as a former institutional churchman, articulate to our listeners what you feel Jesus accomplished on the cross?
Well, I was just reading today a book that is a fascinating book. It's called The Story of Christian Theology, 20 Centuries of Tradition and Reform by Roger E. Olson. And he makes the statement in there that we've never been able to fully explain all that Jesus accomplished. We've been trying for 2,000 years. I don't think any of us fully grasp it, but the way I understand it is, I believe that Christ came and lived among us, the Word became flesh, dwelt among us, experienced life in all of its complexities, its temptations, its struggles. He, of course, did it without sin. And he went to the cross, experienced death, and in so doing, the book of Hebrews says, he identifies with our weaknesses. And it says that we can now come freely and boldly to the throne of grace because we have a high priest, Christ the high priest, who identifies with our weakness. So among the things Jesus accomplished, I don't think it's the only thing, but for me, the big thing that he accomplished is he embraced the whole human experience, took it upon himself, carried it to the grave, and forever defeated it when he rose again from the dead. And now is fully sympathetic and understanding of the struggles we have, what we go through, and invites us to come freely into his presence.
Pretty good stuff, ladies and gentlemen. Stephen, I want to thank you for taking time, and Tyler, thanks for your great question there in Valdosta, Georgia. And you can get Stephen's book. It's published by Zulon Press, Xulon, Zulon. Is that pronounced right, Steve?
That's correct. Too long press.
And at Amazon.com or Barnes & Noble, you can order it, or you can get it, probably ordered at any bookstore, right?
I think so, yeah.
How long has it been out for?
It's been out since the first part of April.
Well, congratulations on that. I know what a challenge it is to write. And again, you can visit Steve's blog at sosaystevo.blogspot.com. Hey, tell your folks that I send my love, will you?
I sure will.
And Sally, yep. Too, and all your kids.
Okay, God bless you, Glenn.
Thanks. That's Stephen L. Rogers, the author of Quits, Going to Church, a recommendation that I could not make more highly. We will talk to you soon. We're going to be back momentarily with our guest, another Stephen, Stephen Karras, the producer and director of the documentary film About Face. You're not going to want to miss that. Just stay on, and we'll be right back with you. This is Glenn Klein Online saying, Shalom, everybody!